Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Two weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money. Bad credit holding you back. Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. How are you all doing this fabulous Saturday, April 10th, 2010? Welcome to the broadcast. We are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate and Investment Offices right here in Scottsdale, Arizona, on the morn of the Subway Fresh Fit 500 NASCAR race, which happens to be in town today. And I'm very excited to be going out and participating in said event. Well, as a spectator, I guess. It would be even cooler if I could race, but I keep being told that I'm too old to drive a race car. So I don't know what that says for Morgan Shepherd, because he's like in his 70s and he still races. But anyway, I found my calling right here with all of you. Anyway, that's it with my NASCAR tirade. Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. Thank you for joining us this Saturday and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. We broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And I am so excited because we're already into the second key in our Keys to Riches Financial Freedom series this week. So we are at Take Action, Make Assessment. And if you are currently an eZine subscriber, by the way, I want to apologize up front. I don't know what's going on. Evidently, there was some sort of snafu with the distribution software or something. I don't know. I didn't get my trouble ticket addressed yesterday. So hopefully you received your eZine and you have the trivia question for this week and know about our cool upcoming guest, Mr. K, who will be joining us today. We have a really neat show for you. Herb's going to be our Investor's Edge guest, and he's written several books. He's a New York Times best-selling business author, and we're going to talk about two different things today, I guess, with him. Well, probably a litany once we get started. But he wrote a book about entrepreneurship and sex, and so I can't wait to engage him on that topic. But he is going to share some things that are not being addressed in the media and why you should be bracing for that next economic bounce that we're about to encounter. So we've got him to look forward to. We have Blair Cherrier sitting in the producer's chair today. She's moderating our chat room as well as our new News by the Numbers segment host. So we'll be hearing from her later on in the broadcast. But do pop by if you are listening on Blog Talk Radio. Drop in our live chat room. She's moderating that. And you'll have lots of fun. Stop by, say hi, wish her well. She is a little nervous about today's news by the numbers, but I said not to worry. The masses will be gentle. So, anyway, we also have this week's key in its entirety and some nuts and bolts on how to implement this week's key into your life to make you financially independent, create some freedom for you and your family. Becoming financially independent isn't about having money or amassing an inordinate amount of wealth. Simply, financial freedom is just about being free to choose whatever you want to do. Imagine being a millionaire in one of these foreign countries that have very oppressive regimes. You can't move around like you want to. You can't do what you want to. You have to check in every time you want to come and go somewhere. That's the value of being financially independent, especially in our country, the greatest, freest country in the world. To be able to call your own shots, come and go as you please, do what you want, when you want, and know that it's not a matter of if you can afford it, but when would I like to do it? And that's what we're going to talk about today when we get into our key specifically for this week in the second hour. We also have our regularly scheduled segments, the Millionaire Minute and Minutes on Your Money before our guest arrives. So let's talk about some things in the news. How about this? This is pretty timely with the iPad's release, and everybody is crushing to create a financial app for all of these PDAs and smartphones. And with the release of Apple's iPad, everybody was eagerly anticipating a bunch of new apps coming out. And what's going to happen? Your iPad is going to be able to have a bunch of personal finance tools. Isn't that kind of interesting? Because I do not have an iPad, and my husband carries the iPhone for the family. So I'm not familiar with all of the apps that they have, but there are some really neat experiential apps that they're coming up for financially for the iPad. So I think that that's what's pretty cool. Developers are pushing, saying that the large screen for the iPad creates more than a superficial difference between the iPhone and the iPad. And with this larger display, apps will be more useful because you can put in a lot more information. So if you have an iPad, you can do a lot more with it. Financially speaking. If you're a stock market buff, there's a $4 app called MarketScan, and this allows you to follow financial news through whatever your favorite websites are and track a portfolio of specific securities. So if you're one of those folks that like to watch how the market moves, and I only do that when I'm in individual stocks. I used to do that for a living. I just day traded until they changed the tax laws on all that. But yeah, I didn't even work for a year. I just day traded, made enough money to go to the craft store and make pottery and fun things. It was an interesting time. And so anyway, if you are a big stock market buff and like to track those kind of apps, then MarketScan has a $4 app for you. Thomson Reuters has a market board. Now, this is a free application, and it helps you track the movement of the world markets, and it also trends business news. And it'll allow you to dig deeper into specific companies by tracking their corporate events like earnings announcements and different press releases, things like that. So you can, if you have this app, preview transcripts of calls with analysts or other events, and this is all for free. And then if you really wanted to keep them, you could buy the full transcript and store them, print them out and store them in a briefcase. It says one of the reviewers says, it's geared to someone that's a little more interested in the details associated with a particular financial moving market event, as opposed to just general macro economic level news. But that's kind of cool. I mean, none of this stuff was around when I was into the stock market. I mean, we had just really started getting online trading. If you're an E-Trade customer, they have E-Trade Mobile Pro. Getting tongue-tied here this morning already. It creates a PC-type experience as if you were online. You can track stocks and follow news even if you don't have an E-Trade account. But if you are an E-Trade account holder, you can do everything that you would be able to do on your desktop computer. And again, that's for free. This one's kind of cool. For $1.99, how about an expense tablet? Users of this application can create a budget with customized categories and track their spending from month to month. Anybody from a teenager to someone with a family could use it to keep an eye on their expenses, the developer says. You can track balances in various accounts, but you'll need to input the information manually. That's the drawback. It doesn't connect with any of your bank accounts to import that information. But because you can go surf the web, you can download that information, or at least view that information on your iPad, and then flip it into your expense tablet. And finally, one of the coolest things, anybody who downloads Gilt for iPad, G-I-L-T, it was just a high-end shopping application, they automatically get a free membership accessing them to invitation-only designer sales from the Gilt Group. These sales last for 36 hours, and items are available on a first-come, first-served basis, so speed is super important. And with your iPad, you can shop faster than on a desktop computer or your cell phone the way it's designed. So they're definitely giving you an advantage if you have an iPad, if you are a high-end shopper and that suits your financial goals. Let me get back into my personal finance expert cap right now and saying, now, this application is not for those who are in process of becoming financially independent. That is for the already financially independent. Okay, so how about, is forgiving mortgage principal right? This is from MSN Smart Spending, and I thought that this was provocative. It was a post from a reader, and it says, is forgiving mortgage principal right? A plan to write off some debt for underwater borrowers elicits anger, but also stories from people who find themselves that are stuck. So now folks are coming out in the droves and starting to address the morality of what's going on. Teresa Mears writes, is it right to forgive mortgage principal for people who owe more than their homes are worth? What if they refinanced and took out cash to buy new cars and kitchens and countertops and crap with that money? What if they had already stretched to buy a home that they knew they could barely afford? And what if they didn't even put any money down? In the meantime, you bought a home that was well below what you could afford, you put 20% down, and you're still staring at that old Formica countertop that it came with 20 years ago. Why doesn't your lender forgive your balance? Provocative question. A New York Times story on the federal government's plan to write off the principal on some mortgages for underwater owners drew hundreds of comments, many of them angry at the idea of bailing out their fellow taxpayers. So here is some comments that I found interesting. Interspersed through hundreds of comments were stories from people who had ended up in trouble with their mortgages for various reasons. Someone from Phoenix, said they had four children. They bought a six-bedroom home for $336,000. They sold their old home and put $69,000 down, which is like 20%. They spent $12,000 on landscaping, $40 for a pool, $25 on furniture that they all paid for in cash. They took out a mortgage, 30-year fixed rate, by the way, not any of these junk loans that were out there. They had a $1,900 payment, and the husband lost the job where he had been for 23 years. Wife's salary was also cut in the same year. They owe $259 on their mortgage, but their home's value has dropped to below $175. The wife writes, they're both hardworking people. They bought a home that they could afford. They made a significant down payment and paid cash for everything associated with the home, including the swimming pool, which most people always finance. It's not the profile of irresponsible homeowner wannabes, as she puts it. Then you have these folks here in Bradenton, Florida. They bought a home for $175 and refied it to remodel the kitchen and two bathrooms and pay off credit card debt, ending up with two mortgages totaling over $300,000. Okay. They started out with a purchase price of $175 and then decided to go nuts and finance all this crap. Now, they had a household income of about $130,000, which they're pushing it, carrying that kind of debt at that income level, by the way. At the peak of the market, they estimated that their home was worth $450,000 to $500,000, so what they thought that they were doing was being conservative. The wife's company went under, and after a year of no income, she got a job paying a fraction, only 30% of what she was making. She tried to get their mortgage modified, and attempts to get their mortgage modified were unsuccessful. Now the house is worth what they paid for it, $175,000. So they're looking at being forced out of their home, possibly bankruptcy, and they're attributing it to factors outside of their control. So that's an interesting one for debate as well. And then here's another comment. A woman and her soon-to-be husband, both with stable jobs, bought an 1,800-square-foot home for less than 2.5 times their annual income. They made a cash down payment and got a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. Now their home values in their area have declined by 40% in the last 5 years, and they owe about $120 more than what their home is worth. She has, the female, has been unemployed for about 8 months, where unemployment is almost 14%. She says they haven't missed any payments, and some of the solutions mentioned are kind of naive. They are unable to even rent out their home and take on another property, as they would still have to put $1,500 a month to cover the difference between current market rents and what they owe on their mortgage. It says that it will also hurt them to be refinanced. They can't seem to get out of it without either taking a credit hit or owing the bank on a short sale. And so they're kind of feeling stuck also. So, and then there's a litany more stories about this. But what I found, what was interesting was, you know, people made decisions based on where they were at the time, and then not thinking about the future or buying into the hype that it's always going to go up, knowing that, you know, I mean, most of the stuff that happens, can we be honest for a moment? You can't tell me that you bought an entry-level tract home and really thought it was going to be worth $500,000. I'm sorry. It's just not. Not even the best-case scenario, especially like here in Arizona, when the median income and the median home price were so far out of whack. It wasn't a matter of if the market busts. It was clearly a matter of when the market was going to bust. And while home ownership is the cornerstone of most families' wealth, making a decision to buy when the economics were not in its favor, when the homes were well overpriced and everybody knew it and couldn't be honest with their clients at the time. You made an investment. I mean, granted, you need housing, but you could always rent. So follow my point. So you made an investment. While it is your housing and shelter, roof over your head, separate that out for a moment and think about that term, investment. If you're investing, there's inherent risk involved. Now, real estate is a tangible asset and is a much safer investment than some other types of investing, like businesses or the stock market. There's a variety of ways to invest, but inherently you know that there's some risk. It is your job to do the due diligence to say, is this really right for me to overpay $100,000 for a property in an entry-level neighborhood, and granted this is the max that I can afford, or this is my minimum standard living justifying the overexpenditure, and getting in when it wasn't financially viable. And I just think about when you go to the casinos and you pull out $100 and you go up to the tables. And let's say you play for a couple hours. You win some, you lose some. But let's say at the end of the day you wind up ahead. So you started with 100, but now you have like 160. When you're done playing at the casino, do you take that 60 and give it back to the casino? Do you? Now, I know the obvious answer to this next question is when you lose, you ask for it back? Of course. Are you going to get it back? No, that was the risk you took. This reminds me of our interview that we had with Larry Winget, the world's most irritational speaker. You know, here's the line that we walk. And, you know, financial coaching aside, the line that you walk is you have to decide, I made a commitment, and most everybody's doing strategic default now. I made a commitment. What do I do about this? Now, some people had enough information to make the right decision back then. It was available, and most people just chose not to. They flew by the seat of their pants. They were trying to keep up with the Joneses or be the Joneses, and they went for it. Now, if you are not willing to give back your winnings, is it really fair to ask somebody to refund your investment? Think about that. What's the answer? If you think you know the answer, chat in with Blair, or you can give me a call. But that's just something that I just wanted to throw out there, some food for thought. If you want to call in, the telephone number is 718-508-9002, 718-508-9002, or you can just chat in. And Blair will let me know what your comments are, and we can talk about them on the air. Well, we have a boatload more stuff for you on this show, so sit still. This would be the time, actually, to not sit still. Maybe go grab a soda, but definitely don't start that lawnmower back up, because we're going to be right back with more of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio right after this.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twoforthroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Here I am. Oh, you thought I wouldn't show up? You thought you could take your credit cards, live beyond your means, spend all you want, not budget a plan, and avoid me? I'm your worst nightmare, baby. Do you know who I am? My first name is Bad, last name is Debt. I promise you, I'm the one that you'll never forget. Cause I can turn your whole life into a wreck. Fix it so no bank will deposit your check. I'll make it so no creditor will show you respect.
Hello, there's Mr. Bad Debt here.
I'm the coldest you ever met, trapping you in my net.
Welcome back to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on this fabulous race day, Saturday, April 10th. We were talking about the more dilemma of mortgage modification. So Congress is proposing to change things and do some debt forgiveness. Here's something else that, let's get away from the morality point of it, because what do? You know, we only have so many years on this planet. Yeah, we make mistakes. You know, we've got all kinds of, you know, debt negotiation and everything else like that going. Let's step away from the moral part of this. I'd also like to talk about what's going on with all that TARP money. you know, we have this TARP money that's supposed to make the banks whole, but some banks, you know, said, no, never mind, there's too many rules associated with taking it. Maybe I don't want to. But a lot of them have taken it. And what you got to think about here is, or here's my question, I guess. All right, right, wrong, or indifferent with this mortgage modification thing. You want to be able to, let's say you make the decision and you want to go forward, and your bank is unwilling to help you. I'm going to give you a great example, as a matter of fact. A friend of one of my real estate clients came to me and said, hey, can you help me out with this? Something's not right. My friend's telling me that and giving me the details of what was going on in their situation. And then said, this is what the bank did. So I'm going to enumerate this situation because I was like, seriously? Like, how did that help? So this person says, you know, my hours at work were cut. And it happens. All right, my hours at work were cut. And I'm struggling. You know, I've got a former spouse. I've got children from a previous relationship. I've got a new relationship. I've got all of these issues, if you will, all these issues that are keeping me from making my money. And the bank, here's the irony, the bank solicited the loan modification. They offered the loan modification to this individual. And then, and I've been working trying to straighten this out, and then they fill out all of the paperwork. They do this income evaluation, which as a former mortgage underwriter, I can't believe that this was even accepted or an acceptable form of income verification or qualification. But nonetheless, that they did this. So they estimated, based on what the person said that they were making, didn't really demonstrate any income, didn't ask for a lease for the subletter, the tenant there that was paying rent. The rent wouldn't have been seasoned anyway based on underwriting criteria. And so they rewrote his loan, and they sent him his paperwork. The principal balance was going up $4,000 for the cost, the quote-unquote cost, to do the loan modification. When, again, this TARP money pays the banks to do these, so ideally it should be free to you, or at least no charge to you. So they up his mortgage balance by $4,000 for the cost of doing this. They didn't alter his balance or lower it in any way, and they gave him the same exact interest rate that he had. After paying all these years on this mortgage, all they were doing was rewriting a 30-year loan. They didn't even recast his interest based on his principal balance. And mortgage companies can recast your loan so simply without having to do any of this other modification stuff where you have to do income verification or things like that. And if you've had your home for a while, because of the way interest is front-loaded 7/8, so the first payment you make on a closed-end loan like a car payment or a mortgage, 1/8 of your payment goes to principal, 7/8 goes to interest. And then over the term of the loan, those ratios flip-flop till you're paying mostly principal and a little bit of interest. So if you've gotten some momentum, if you have any time in on a loan, all right, you've gotten over that hump of that paying 7/8. So at the end of the day, they upped his mortgage $4,000. They recasted his loan, so even though they gave him the same interest rate, because they were extending it out another 30 years, the payment went up. It was supposed to go down, but the monthly mortgage payment actually went up. And then they're like, well, you have to sign this. You wanted a mortgage modification. We did it. Now you got to sign this. And I'm like, how can you make somebody accept terms when they said, I can't pay what I have now. You're going to raise my balance and charge me more per month? And here's the thing. Here's the big thing that I just don't get, and I wish somebody could explain it to me, is if the money that Obama set aside is supposed to make these banks whole, why on earth are they not doing the right thing? Okay? So we're stepping aside from the morality of the last segment, and we're talking about why aren't the banks making this stuff happen? By dragging this out, we are perpetuating the economic misery. We're preventing people from getting back on their feet, and we are not able to stabilize our real estate markets. I keep hearing how the markets are stabilizing, the markets are stabilizing. Not so much, because here's some factors, and I'll be excited when Herb gets on the line to talk about this with him, is that these banks not only are not doing you a favor, even though they solicited your business and they're not doing you a favor, they're screwing you over. And I love this big bank too. It's bend them over one more time of A. That's what I'm calling them. Bend them over one more time of A. And they're not fixing the residential market issue that's already occurred. But the thing that nobody's talking about is what's going on in the commercial marketplace. These banks are letting these businesses ride heavily into default, and they're not filing foreclosure, they're not taking the properties back, they're not putting them over conservatorship is what's coming to mind, but that's not the person who manages a property for people in bankruptcy. Receivership, there we go, it was coming to me. So instead of moving these properties and starting to move that money around and shovel that debt on Wall Street, they're being relatively quiet. And I know this because specifically in our building, there has been a delinquent tenant for more than 2 years, and they have not filed the notice of default. And I know that there aren't any payments being made because they're not making their association due payments. So, and I keep approaching this bank to try to buy this building. And I get, no answer. It's crazy. I just don't get it. But and I've offered them, more than what I think I should have. But I really wanted the building, and they're like, whatever. They just, ignore me. So I just don't get what's going on with these banks today. But we've got to get them back on track. I think that all of those forced government hyperbole and, threatened executive orders and stimulus this, and, we're going to bail you out, but the criteria for you to take this money is longer than healthcare reform. And so with it being so convoluted, are they really helping us? I almost feel like with this, supposed bailout, that the banks aren't taking the money because they don't want to be beholden to the government, but it's hindering these businesses' ability to clean up this marketplace. I just think back to when this happened before, and when we had the problems with the savings and loan deal here, and the RTC came in and sold off all of the stuff, all of the bad bank debt. And, it just wiped Arizona developers out. Any of the developers that built in the last 10 years weren't here 10 years before. Anybody that built property in the 80s was virtually non-existent. They either went bankrupt or they were bought up by larger entities. So I find that interesting. I find that rather provocative. Because we're kind of at a stalemate, but the thing that really made me angry And, you know, I'm diligently working to assist this person and getting a much better mortgage modification. But, you know, they don't answer their phone. And, I mean, the thing that gets me angry is they solicited this person first. They solicited them. It's not like they were knocking on the bank's door begging for help. So, anyway, just some food for thought. We're going to take a real quick break, and we will be back with our Investor's Edge segment and our guest, Herb Kay. Coming up on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, we will be right back with more after this.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagenhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals, Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am your hostess with the Financial Gnosis, and it is that time again. Our Investor's Edge is on deck. And joining us today, I am so excited for Herb Kay to be a part of our broadcast. Herb is a self-made millionaire and nationally recognized financial and business advisor. He's made numerous TV appearances on Bloomberg, Fox, CNBC, and he chides. Don't hold that against him, but his appearance here on Unlock Your Wealth Radio will kind of negate that. It's like when one spouse votes Democrat and the other votes Republican, they kind of cancel each other out. So he'll make up for it today. We'll work him over the coals here at the Unlock Your Wealth Radio. He is also an expert at simplifying complex information for anyone to understand. Wow, he might be my twin brother. Isn't that crazy? In 2000, this is why I want to talk to this guy. He wrote a book. By the way, he's a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller. But I love the title sucks me in. You know, it's all about the title sometimes with books. Regardless of how fabulous the information is, the title will get you every time, and this one did for sure. How to Get Filthy, Stinking Rich and Still Have Time for Great Sex, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Wealth and Happiness. I am so excited to welcome our silver-haired sage. He works tirelessly to help people survive and even come out ahead in this recession. Herb, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm so sorry I'm late. I'm in Napa having too good a time, and the time slipped away.
Yeah, well, see what you do, tardy boy? Shame on you.
I'm so apologetic. Oh, my God, I'm not usually this way. Oh, well, forgive me. Let's have fun.
I plan on it. So I love the title of this book because one of the things that upsets the apple cart in a lot of families or just in relationships in general is when you are dating or married to an entrepreneur and there's lack of balance.
Oh, yeah, workaholism. You know, Right now, if you were to call my regular office and try to get me on the telephone, it says, look, I'm not a brain surgeon. I'll be back when I'm back. Relax. You know, a lot of people think that if they don't do it immediately, it's going to get away from them. It's kind of like, you know, the monsters are running after them and they're catching up. I've never understood that mindset. You know, most problems will fix themselves if you don't do anything at all. So it's easy just to have a lot of balance in your life if you just take a chill pill.
Well, and you know what? Many problems aren't really problems. But
No, they're just perception.
Into problems.
Yeah, just perception.
Exactly. And we're filtering for that most of the time as human beings. It's just natural for us to look for the negative in things.
Well, that's because we think we can control things. But, you know, I hate to sound Buddhist, but control's an illusion. That's the truth.
You're right. There are only three things that we can control in this lifetime. Our thoughts, our words, and our actions. And outside of that, it's just influence.
That is true.
Yeah, so tell me, how do you get filthy, stinking rich and still have time for great sex?
Well, when I wrote the book in 2000, it was a different game than today. In 2000, I would have said, you start your own business, you grow it the right way, which is what the book covers, then you have a little time for yourself. But today, it's a whole different story. I think that 10 years ago is now an irrelevant period of time, because I think we're reaching the ultimate reset on the economy, where it's all going to come crashing down around our ears. So we have to take a much, much different approach. I don't know how much you've read about other stuff I've written, but at this moment in time, I'm one of those that thinks we're on the brink of a total financial reset.
I'm of the same mindset, actually, and I've been preaching that for some time. I said that there's still another shoe that's yet to drop.
Oh, yeah. Big, big, big shoe.
Mm-hmm. So what is your prediction of that shoe? I know I have a good idea. What do you think that final shoe is?
It's hard to say. I think there are a number of risks out there that could push us over. So overall, I think that most people have completely misread how this crisis came upon us to begin with. I don't really think this was a crisis of banks that were too big to fail or mortgages that shouldn't have been made or, you know, automobile companies getting into trouble or whatever it might be. I think all of that were only symptoms of what the underlying problem is. And I think the underlying problem is the entitlement state itself and using the Federal Reserve to print money with nothing behind it. So when the collapse came in the fall of 2008, and the government basically attempted to reinflate the economy through TARP and all the subsequent programs that came after it, it's doing it with just made-up money, with just paper. So to me, this is just an illusion. And I think it'll take very little for the whole – and the only reason it hasn't collapsed even further is the whole world is engaging in the exact same medicine at the exact same time. All the world's countries and all the world's currencies, with only one or two exceptions, are printing enormous amounts of money with nothing behind it. So relative to them, we look okay – only because they're doing the same thing and we're all sliding the debt together. You know, if all the balls are sinking into the tide, you might get the illusion that nobody's sinking because it's all moving at the same time, if you kind of get the fractured illusion there. But what I think it could be, for example, we could discover the Chinese economy is the mirage that it really is. It's impossible that they're growing 9% a year while the rest of their customers are all in a deep recession, and they're not going to lead the world out of recovery. And no one seems to stop and think that maybe in this one-party state with no free press and no regulators that they're simply lying about their economic numbers. I mean, is that ever, could it be that they're just making stuff in factories and throwing it into warehouses and calling it sales? Could it be that the whole thing is a mirage? I think probably. Or there could be the inevitable, and I believe it is inevitable. Pardon me, that's my cell phone. And the inevitable, I turned it off. It could be the inevitable attack of Israel and Iran, which will disrupt the world oil markets. And if that happens, you know, the world could go sliding off the cliff just by a shock like that. And I believe that attack is inevitable. Or it could be that we have another financial meltdown in the United States. Or it could be that, you know, the stock market's been trading very thinly and that big money comes in and bets the other way. It could be anything. I don't play the game of predicting what's the final straw. I just know it's coming. And if I were everybody out there, I would be moving to hedge that aggressively.
Well, I personally believe it's going to come in a couple of ways. I believe that because we have yet to see the banks even acknowledge there's an issue in the commercial mortgage markets, let alone actually address what's what's being swept under the carpet and, you know, what
Hello.
They're not doing.
Hello?
Are you there?
Darling, I'm on this line. We're at a hotel, and they're ringing me in 15 different ways. Sorry.
Oh, it's the nature of the beast when you're popular, Herb.
I'm telling you, I'm popular. Keep going.
It happened.
I don't think
you
the
know,
bank,
well,
I think the banks were all insolvent. If you, I mean, they're borrowing money from the government at 0.25%. They're reinvesting it in government bonds at 3.5% to 4%. They're banking the spread and calling it profit and paying themselves bonuses, and they're marking their assets to make-believe. But that's just, I don't know that that's going to be the one that kicks it over because everyone's kind of buying into that nonsense.
Yes, but, you know, you've got so many businesses that are propped up in all of these, you know, strip malls, retail centers, big office buildings that are pushing paper around and moving things from the left to the right that I believe are illusory. And, you know, I called what happened in the mortgage markets and the resultant real estate crisis on my radio show in 2004. Way back then, the writing was on the wall, but nobody wanted to listen. They're like, you don't know what you're talking about. And I kept saying, you got to go and look at the numbers, the median home price versus median income, and then it's got to be relative to what type of economy you have in your individual state. We're a service economy. There was no way that we could ever sustain these real estate prices out here, ever, number one. And, you know, and our value wasn't a true organic value increase. It was due to a shortage of inventory that spurred the whole thing here in 05. And it just escalated. But, you know, I watched what the mortgage markets were doing, and I watched how it changed because I used to underwrite them. Mm-hmm. And I used to sell loans. And I remember my chief underwriter saying to me, well, Heather, if we don't do it, somebody else will, so we might as well make the money.
Well, I understand why they do that, but that's – again, that's symptomatic, not causary. So
yeah.
The reason that the markets grew is because the Federal Reserve, from its creation in 1913, has built inflation into the system. And they built inflation into the system so that the government could slowly monetize its debt. In other words, as we spend more money than we have by printing paper money, we make the money less valuable, and the debt becomes less valuable. Well, people have gotten so used to it, but now it distorts their buying and selling decisions, so they have to do things like investing in real estate aggressively to offset future inflation. Otherwise, their spending power is diluted over time. Well, we've just come to the end of that road, Heather. That's all. All this other stuff is just commentary on it. It's the Federal Reserve. The problem is the Federal Reserve. It has everything else that we talk about, whether it's commercial real estate or residential real estate or the government spending or whatever it might be, is all simply symptomatic of a problem that we're printing money with nothing behind it. And this is really an aberration historically, and I think we're going to come to the end of the aberration. I think we're going to have to go back on hard money, which I know makes me sound like a nut, but that's going to be the solution.
Well, you know, and you know what? You're on target with that because, you know, I love my husband's so funny. He starts his business day because he deals on East Coast time earlier than I do, and so he goes home in the afternoon and watches Glenn Beck, and he gets so frustrated because – like, he doesn't want to hear what he has to say, but he knows that he's right on target. And I love the episode where he did the inconvenient debt thing with the construction riser and showed what happened when we went off the gold standard.
Yeah, that's really the root of all of this. The root of all of this is really the money. But everyone buys into the, you know, it's like a giant Ponzi scheme that makes Bernie Madoff look like a walk in the park. And we all believe we have money because we think that that paper in our pocket is actually worth something. But it's really just ink and paper, and there is nothing behind it. And eventually we come to the point where collectively, and it'll come without warning, everyone wakes up one morning and says, oh, my God, I really don't have anything. And that's
you know what's an interesting side note that I find really provocative is that gold is at such a high price, and everybody's like, oh, you got to have gold, you got to have gold. But we're not on a gold standard, so it's not like you can go down to the grocery store with your Krugerrands and say, hey,
yeah,
I'm
but
hungry.
You really got to hold a lot of gold. I mean, gold, as sure as God made little green apples, gold's going to be $5,000 an ounce. I'm just telling you. Gold is not a very high price. Not when you adjust it for inflation. For gold to hit its all-time high adjusted for inflation, it last hit around $1,000 an ounce in 1980. If you adjust that for inflation, it would have to be at $2,300. And
but how do you convert that into a viable currency? There's my question.
Well,
okay, I have a big pile of gold, but I'm hungry.
they're going to call the money. They'll call the money and reissue it in either gold or gold and commodity-backed dollars, and people will have a lot less of it, but it'll be real, and we'll just do a revaluation. That's what I think is going to happen. We're going to have a reset. The natural progression of prices should be down, not up. We all think that inflation is normal for a healthy economy, and that's we're all buying into a silliness. The normal course of prices should be lower, not higher, because of improved productivity.
Agreed, and technology and streamlined processes.
What's that?
Agreed, like because you know technology improves
right.
The process
everything
is streamlined, and so the cost of manufacturing should go down.
That's right. So why do things get more expensive over time? Because of inflation. Because the government is printing money with nothing behind it, and it simply can't be controlled.
Well, I remember at the holidays, one of my friends was going back to Africa, and I couldn't get it in the country that I was in, but I really wanted a $1 billion note from Zimbabwe because I was like, I want to be able to say like I'm a billionaire, so I need a couple of those, right?
Right, yeah.
And so when my friend comes back, I said, did you get me the $1 billion notes? And he goes, no. And I'm like, oh, man, that's why I asked you to do one thing. And he goes, I got you $1 trillion notes.
Yep.
And I was like, seriously?
That's
just nuts.
We're doing something that we call it quantitative easing, but that just means we're printing a boatload of money.
Yeah. Well, and it's got to stop. So knowing that this is on the horizon for us, what do we do as individuals to brace ourselves for this?
I think you sell all American and dollar-denominated assets that you own, all of them. I think you put half your money into gold and related precious metals like platinum and palladium. And I think you put the other half of your money into stocks denominated in foreign currencies in countries that are better run. And then you collect dividends on them. And just two off the top of my head, I'd say Australia and Canada. And I'd also throw on probably Denmark and Switzerland.
And I would
hold my assets not in ADRs, not in American depository receipts, but I'd hold them in the currencies. You must hold them in the currencies of the countries they're in, because they're much better run countries than we are. We are going to have a real big problem here before too long. Just mark my words, really, really big. Big like you can't.
And what is your timeline for this to occur?
I don't know. Every minute that you spend worrying about what day something's going to happen is a minute wasted. It's just inevitable. So
agreed. But you think we'll see it in our lifetime?
I think we'll see it very soon. But you know what's very soon? Is it 6 months from now, or a year from now, or 3 years from now? We're going to see it really soon. Security is an illusion. It doesn't exist in nature. We've all been lulled into believing that the whole country is too big to fail, and it's not. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'm an optimist. I think we're going to be okay. But I think we're going to be okay after a major, major resettling of how we do business. The entitlement state, as we understand it, is going to come to an end.
Well, and that should. I mean, I just look at the kids
today.
You say that,
but you realize that most of the people listening to you right now are collecting Social Security. And you could shut down the rest of the government right now, the whole thing. You could shut down the military and all the welfare programs and everything else, and with Social Security and Medicare alone draws us into a deficit. It's impossible to balance the budget without cutting Social Security and Medicare. Impossible. Can't be done.
Well, and, you know, boomers are there's still a few years left of boomers to start hitting the system, too.
There's a lot of years of boomers left to hit the system. They're just starting to hit it. Social Security is what's going to wreck the country.
Yeah.
Which is the irony of people. A lot of people say we got to cut the government spending, but those are the same people receiving the benefit. You can't keep taking money that's not there. It just has to stop.
Agreed. So what does one do? I mean, you're 78. You can't really have like a full-time job. You paid into the system faithfully and honestly.
What you have to do is gradually phase out the plan, but you got to start really soon. So you have to tell people, if you're over 65 and living on Social Security now, we're going to keep the promise the way it was made. But if you're between 55 and 65, you're going to get less than what you were promised. If you're between 45 and 55, even less. And then right now you have to start means testing everything. You know, a lot of older people have a lot of assets but not a lot of income, and they pretend like they're broke. But you have to start counting assets against what they're receiving and make them liquidate them to support themselves. You've got to start not paying Social Security to rich people. That's crazy. Social Security should be renamed Old Age Welfare, which is all that it is, and then people should collect it who need it, and the ones that don't shouldn't, period.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed, because and you're forced to take it. If you are affluent, you're still forced to take it. You're still forced to go on Medicare, even though you would prefer.
It's a ridiculous system. It's a ridiculous system. It's a welfare system with no means testing. Who came up with that stupid idea?
Well, yeah, not me.
Well,
that was before my time.
You can say thank you, Franklin Roosevelt, wherever you are.
Yeah, not my favorite Roosevelts.
None of them were my favorite. I mean, listen, you're talking to a guy who thinks the greatest president in American history was Martin Van Buren. So, you know, what can I say?
No, we all have our favorites, you know, but in my lifetime, you know, I grew up in double-digit inflation with Jimmy Carter,
mm-hmm.
and my mom would go to the grocery store with two small kids. My dad was, you know, took off, you know, child support was sketchy, and she could go spend $20 and come home with two bags of groceries. Reagan gets elected. My mom goes to the grocery store. She spends $20. She comes home with five bags of groceries. I mean, I saw trickle-down economics working. My mother refused to take a dime of welfare, and she was too proud for that, and she was going to figure out how to do it on her own. And she raised my brother and I. We never spent a day in daycare, and she did it as a single woman and divorced with two small kids, a breast cancer survivor. She had a double mastectomy when I was five or four.
Mm-hmm.
And she managed to do it all in the age of discrimination. Sexual discrimination was still big. You know, they didn't change sexual discrimination for women in financing until 1988, and I was already 19 years old then. And my brother was 17. So when my mother needed help, when she needed financing, she couldn't get it without a cosigner.
Yep. Well, you know, your mom is amazing. But, you know, in the bigger picture, what we need to do is so severe. Frankly, I don't waste a lot of time telling people what we need to do because I know we won't do it until crisis hits. Winston Churchill said that people don't change until they hear the gong of their own self-preservation. So my feeling is, for the time being, nothing's going to happen and no change is going to come. We're all just going to talk about it until it actually hits the fan. And then, of course, we'll do the right thing, hopefully.
Right. Well, you know, psychologically speaking, people don't change until the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same.
That's right. And that's not here. Right now, we're living in a mirage of printed money, of a governmentally inflated economy with printed money. And that's okay. You know, I don't say it's just the way it is. So I don't waste a lot of time trying to convince people to do something they're not going to do until they're faced with it. I just tell people, look, you're going to be faced with it. It may not be today and it may not be tomorrow. And I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong and it's going to be a disaster.
Well, you know, of all the crystal ball magic tricks I've ever done, you know, I called almost to the month and day what was happening in the mortgage markets, and I wish I was that good at picking lottery numbers. But
I was developing real estate in Mexico, and in 2006, I sold off all my property because I saw it coming. And my partner at the time sued me to try to stop me, and I actually had to cut his legs out from under him on purpose and get out of there. And I still haven't gotten my thank you note, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, because
I've always
it's
put my money where my mouth is. And right now, I don't see any safe place to invest other than precious metals and overseas.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think, after it's all said and done, that we'll still come out as the leading nation of the world, or do you think that we're going to be toppled?
You know, that's a huge geopolitical question. I really don't see an alternative to us, but a lot of it's going to depend on where the leadership is and where the people's minds are and what they're willing to accept. It's, you know, I shudder to think what the world would be like without a dominant U.S. role, but at the same time, we can't afford to keep policing the planet without being compensated for it. I don't know. I think there has to be a new way of looking at things. I wonder why we have troops stationed around the world in places like Europe and Japan when World War III isn't coming by land anymore. I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wonder, looking at historical perspectives, why we're worried about the Chinese, who, if anything, have a tendency to turn back onto themselves. They've never been an international power in all of history. I don't know why they would start now. I don't know why we're afraid of them. And Russia's a basket case. We will probably end up dominant just because we're the least messed up of the bunch. But I don't think that's our biggest concern right now.
Well, I think a lot of the other countries, like Russia especially, they just cannibalize themselves when anyone gets ahead. you know, they just kind of chew them all up.
I want to preface this that I speak fluent Russian and was a Russian linguist at the National Security Agency. But having said that, the Russians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity throughout their entire history. They are just a people that if you can – if there's two ways to go, they'll always pick the wrong fork in the road. That's just the story of Russian history, and I wouldn't worry about them.
Yeah, and, you know, I know a lot of people are concerned about China, and we go to China a lot, and my husband still does business over there, and we have extended family over on that side of the world. And I just don't see when – because I see the news over there that we don't see over here, and I see what their challenges are. And I don't believe that they're sustainable because, you know, they're having major challenges with their birth restrictions now in population and worker bees because nobody wants their kid to work in a factory anymore.
Well, I really think the Chinese are probably going to have a revolution. I mean, but we won't know it because they don't have a free press and we have no idea what's going on.
Well, it's starting already.
You know, they have a billion people, and maybe 50 million of them are participating in this economic recovery, and the other 950 million are still poor as dirt. And sooner or later, someone's going to get unhappy with that situation.
And they're having a lot of ethnic revolts from people from different sections. And, you know, you can only think you can control people for so long, and you can only suppress people for so long before they rise up.
And the only reason
we say, I'm not going to take this.
Is that,
pardon?
The only reason we should care about that, because it's really the Chinese problem, is because when it becomes clear the Chinese economy is a mirage, that could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. The whole world now is betting on China leading the recovery out. And I just think that's silly. But that is the global bet.
Well, yeah, because it appears that their pockets are deep and endless. And I don't know that they are.
No, they aren't.
And
eventually what they're going to have to do is revalue the yuan against the dollar, which will be disastrous to our government. I mean, the idiots in Washington who want them to revalue the yuan don't understand how international finance works. If they revalue the yuan, we're screwed. Horrible. We won't be able to sell our debt anymore, and then we're in real trouble.
Mm-hmm. And then that's a big problem that I'm having because, you know, everybody's talking about mortgage interest rates and keeping them low. But historically, mortgage rates haven't been where they are, although the last decade has been interesting since 9/11 when we had the big drop in interest rates. We've seen a decline of home ownership, and home ownership should have never been at 72%.
Well, whether it should or it shouldn't, I don't think that's anyone. See, I'm a libertarian. I think the free market decides what it should or shouldn't be. I don't think there should be a target. I don't even think there should be a discussion of that. But at the same time, I would tell people right now that looking at the mortgage interest rates, they're ridiculously low. And if you have home equity, you should borrow it out right now and buy gold and invest overseas with it and get it out of U.S.-denominated assets. I mean, this is the time to go deeply into debt, not the other way around. People have this all backwards. If there was ever a time to borrow everything in sight and invest it elsewhere, this is it. That's how you get rich in this disaster, because the inflation that's coming to the United States will automatically pay your debt for you. And so what you want to do is move your assets and whatever equity you have into other places that are safer than ours right now, right now.
That's quite a contrarian view compared to what the talking heads typically say.
Oh, because the talking heads are all a bunch of mediocrities. You know, these are people that have made their living parroting what each other say, and then when they're all wrong together, they all go, see, we were wrong with everybody else, and that's how we justify being wrong. Look, most people are wrong most of the time. You can make book on that. Most people are wrong most of the time. And the talking heads all went to the same schools and took the same courses and believed the same nonsense. But I'm telling you, if you just open your eyes and look right in front of you, you can see that the real estate market in this country has a lot further to drop than it has. It's been artificially stalled by government intervention, but that can't go on for very long. The government's going to have to raise interest rates to increase its debt. It's going to have to debase the currency to try to handle the national debt and try to monetize it. And you want to get your money out of here as quickly as you can and play the trend. Be like the government. Borrow everything in sight and get it the hell out of here. That's what you should do.
Well, but what about arbitrage in the marketplace? I mean, are we going to just break even over there, or are we actually going to prosper if we put our money?
It's hard to say. I mean, the governments of Australia and Canada have aggressively moved to protect their currency, which is why I like them. The safest currency in the world right now is the kroner, the Danish kroner, because they've done exactly the same thing. And the Swiss franc has a 1,000-year history of weathering these things. So no, I don't. I think if you hold it in the foreign currency and allow the dollar to devalue against it, you're going to be better off. I'd stay away from the euro. I'd stay away from the yen. I'd stay away from the yuan. But, and at the same time, I'd hold half my assets in gold. And I do, by the way. In the real world, I hold half my assets in gold. And consequently, when you won't just stay even. You'll be way ahead. While your neighbors are all wondering how they're going to eat, you'll be rich.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, you should be borrowing. If you're still creditworthy, borrow every nickel in sight because you're never going to see interest rates this cheap again. This is your chance to leverage and win. The worst thing that happens if you listen to my advice is that you sell those assets and pay the debt off later. That's the worst thing that happens. But if I'm right, you're going to be rich and everyone else is going to be poor.
Well, and I think that there's something that hasn't been said about what you're talking about. You know, and this is the one thing, there's a difference between good debt and bad debt. I mean, buying gold and financing it is different than going out and buying the latest Louis Vuitton
handbag. Right, I'm not saying you run
up
your credit
card.
When I say leverage yourself up, I mean take mortgages. If you have a house that's worth $300,000 and your mortgage is $100,000, you need to borrow as much against that house as you possibly can right now. That's good debt. It's cheap debt. You can buy foreign stocks that pay 6% dividends that will cover the payment for you, and you'll make the money just on the devaluation of the dollar. For example, Canadian Oil Trust. Oil is going to go higher than anyone ever thought possible, and not because the world is running out of it because we're swimming in the stuff, but because we're debasing the dollar, and that's what's going to make oil prices go up. You watch. Oil shouldn't be $80 now. It should be $20 just based on supply and demand because the world's in recession. It's this high because we're debasing the dollar. We're debasing the dollar. That's the message.
Wow, that's been so great to have you on. I
know. Now that we've said all this horrible stuff, by the way, Heather, I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong because if I'm right, it means a lot of people suffer, and I would much rather be wrong. So I just want to make it clear to everyone listening, I have no need to be right about this.
Well, it's kind of funny. I think that's the common conversation between man and woman, and it's always, you know, why do you always have to be right? And I'm like, I don't want to be right, and it's not about me being right and keeping score.
No, I don't care. I'm not a talking head. I have no. I'm not. I don't care. I care that people.
It's me just looking objectively.
By the way, may I shamelessly promote my website for a moment?
Well, I was going to ask you to give it out for people who wanted to, whose thoughts you have provoked.
It's Herb.
One more time?
HERBKAYSOS.com. HERBKSOS.com. And if you when you get to the website, slide the cursor over on top of my name. There'll be a drop-down box. Go to my blogs. I write a lot of stuff about this every day.
It's very exciting information for sure. And everything that you've said is credible and substantive. You know, I mean, you could have somebody hear this, you know, the sky is falling and not substantiate why, but you've given credible evidence to support what you're saying. And I've looked at things a little bit different, and I haven't been a part of the, markets are stabilizing and blah, 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 and life is good. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. Atlas is still shrugging.
Oh yeah. Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yes, but I am anticipating the movie next year.
What movie are they making?
Oh, Angelina Jolie is gonna play Dagny Taggart in Atlas
Get
Shrugged.
Get out of here! Are they actually making Atlas Shrugged into a movie? Really?
Swear, yeah. Like it started like 7 years ago. She attached her name to the project, and I was like, really?
I had no idea. You know,
oh, yeah, that's a book I read at 11 because I was one of those book nerds as a kid. And so every year, like, you know, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits, I always sharpen the saw. Every January I reread the book or I listen to the audio.
I just reread it recently. You know, Atlas Shrugged, do you realize it's the second best-selling book in history after the Bible?
I know. People flip out when I tell them that.
They sell over 600,000 copies a year of that book, and they have since 1958.
I know. And it was one of Ayn Rand's greatest works. But I love Ayn Rand, though. I mean, I've read Virtues of Selfishness, The Fountainhead. I mean, she's just got a litany of stuff.
Stuff, too. You know, she personally was off her rocker, of course.
The way she comported her personal life.
Her personal life was interesting. But she was brilliant. She was kind of the Catherine the Great of her time, you know. Lots of young lovers and crazy as hell. But that, there you go. What can I say?
Yeah. But her perspective
is Brilliant casting. You're the first person I know that's mentioned that to me. That's so interesting. I'm going to Google it.
Go to IMDb.com.
What's that?
Go to IMDb.com. Yeah, it's the movie database thing.
I'm going to check it out. That is so cool.
Yeah, you know who I wish would be able to play Francisco D'Anconia, but he's not here?
Who?
Raul Julia.
Oh, he would have been perfect, but of course he's dead, so we can't use him. So
yes, but in my cast
Antonio
of characters.
Banderas will do it instead.
Yeah, he's a little, I don't know, he might work. I think he might be a little too short, but if, you know, he gained some weight, because I envision, you know, Francisco a little portly, kind of as a portly playboy.
Gael Garcia, a really terrific Mexican actor, could do it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm so excited to see that movie. I know they're cutting out a lot of stuff. How do you squeeze, you know, a work that took 10 years to write in 2.5 hours?
Fine print.
Yeah. I mean, the abridged audio book is 10 CDs.
I'd like to know how they're going to handle the John Galt speech. That ought to be good.
Yeah.
It goes on and on and on. Even my eyes glaze over. I mean, just, oh, my God.
Yes, but it's hypnotizing. I actually like Hank Reardon's testimony when he was on trial better.
So who plays him, Tom Hanks?
I don't know who's going to play Hank Reardon, but it's got to be a more dashing man than that.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
I think he has to be dashing, but, you know, kind of like just
Ford.
Overwhelmed by his creepy family, his lecherous family.
Ford.
Yeah. He would work.
Yeah, that would
he
work.
He would work. Yay. Well, I am so grateful that you stopped by. Again, give us your website one more time for folks that want to find you.
HERBKAYSOS.com. HERBKSOS.com.
Yay. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and your Saturday to be with us. And as always, if you're driving around and cannot write down Herb's website, as always, you will find a link to his website on our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Stay tuned. We have so much more in store for you on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches, right after this. Has your cell phone or iPod ever run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Well, now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right now on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S industries.com.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Office Depot Old Spice Chevrolet, and you're listening to Heather Wagonhals on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Listen, folks, we talked a lot about money on this project, but we haven't talked about how crazy and how obsessed today's culture has gotten about money. So I would like to end this project with a warning. I'd like you to be
welcome
careful.
Welcome back
be
to
careful.
The broadcast,
be
everyone.
Love money. You need to know
you
the truth
are
money.
Listening
and
to Heather Wagonhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Thank you so much for investing time in yourself today by tuning in to our weekly Saturday broadcast. By the way, you know what? I forgot to ask you the trivia question. This week's trivia question, as always pulled from our midweek update, is we talked about the aspects of foreclosure on Wednesday's show. I named a bunch of things that needed to be investigated before buying a foreclosed home. All you have to do is name one to win. Again, you can call in, chat in, or email in to win. And are you saying to yourself, nuts, I didn't listen to the Wednesday show. How am I going to answer that? Never fear. Help is here. If you subscribe to the electronic magazine, our weekly e-zine for the Unlock Your Wealth radio show, you will get the question before today's broadcast. And the value in that is if you haven't listened to the previous broadcast, now you can go looking for that specific information and you can win. We have so many great things available in our prize chest. One of the things you can receive now that officially I have a book out in the marketplace, you can win a personalized copy of Yes, You Can, written by myself in participation with Dr. Warren Bennis and the late business philosopher Jim Rohn, as well as a litany of other fabulous professional speakers and authors. You can also win autographed copies of books from our previous show guests for those that had books and were able to donate it to our library of winnings. You can get financial coaching. You can get credit report review. You name it, we have it. All you have to do is subscribe. And simply, all you need to do is drop us an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com. ezine@unlockyourwealth.com. And you, too, could be a trivia question winner. And remember, because this show is podcasted after the live broadcast, that doesn't mean that you don't have a chance to win, because someone may not have answered the trivia question in either the chat room or on the air. So you can always email in to win, and that email address is trivia@unlockyourwealth.com. If you think you have the answer, shoot us an email, and you could be our next featured winner. So guess what time it is, folks?
It's a need you gotta fill. It's news you gotta know. And News by the Numbers is your favorite part of the show. Yeah.
Yes, it is that time again for News by the Numbers, and we have had a bit of a dry spell. Some of it has been due to programming and also attrition of personnel here. But we have a new segment host for News by the Numbers. And in addition to chairing this segment,
Blair is also now our new show producer on Saturday. She is our chat room moderator and our official tweeter for the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. Blair, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being a part of things. You know, I don't think people realize what it takes to put on a show like this three times a week. We have three shows, but the Saturday show is a two-hour show. That can be quite daunting. And in addition to that, you are our social media manager at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, because it takes a full-time job to make sure that we are constantly creating original content that provides value to all of our followers. And for those who didn't know that before, that's Blair's job, to make sure that you have all of the timely tips, tricks, tools, and information you need to create financial independence in a format digestible for you. So whether you follow us on Facebook or Twitter or any of the other litany of social media outlets, that is single-handedly chaired by the one and only Blair Cherrier. So I just want to personally thank you for that. And I'm also excited to have you start doing the News by the Numbers segment. So what is going on in the markets this week?
Well, late buying led by Chevron pushes blue chips to levels not seen since September of 2008, also helping their reports that a bailout of Greece is in the works.
Wow.
From Elizabeth Strott and Charlie Blaine on Friday, the Dow Jones briefly hit 11,000 yesterday for the first time since September of 2008. The blue chips reached just slightly over 11,000 and slipped back. The index still finished up at up 70 points at just under 11,000. And it was also the first time the Dow had traded above 11,000 since September of 2008 as well, and it had its best close since September of 2008. Like the Dow, the Standard & Poor's 500 Index also had its best close since September of 2008, rising 8 points to just under 1,200. The NASDAQ rose 17 points to almost 2,500, which is its best finish since June of 2008. The breaching of Dow 11,000 came in a late state of buying. It reflects growing hopes that an economic recovery has not only begun, but is gaining strength. That momentum could bode well for the next week when the first quarter earnings season kicks in. At the same time, the rally reflected relief on Wall Street on reports that Greece, Europe's most indebted nation, will get an international bailout to avert a default. That pushed the euro higher against the dollar, and there were reports that aid would be forthcoming over the weekend. The Dow finished the week with a 0.5% gain, with the S&P up 1.5% and the NASDAQ up just over 2%. It was the sixth straight week of gains for U.S. stocks, the longest winning streak since the big stock market rally erupted in March of 2009. Investors cheered a stronger-than-expected report on wholesale inventories. They pushed oil refining stocks higher after Chevron said its refining and marketing division would return to profit in the first quarter. Technology stocks were also strong, with the NASDAQ 100 index rising 14 points to just under 2,000. Apple rose almost 1%, bringing it to just below its all-time high of $241.92. Microsoft closed up about 1.5%, bringing it to $30.34, and this was its first close above $30 since mid-January of this year as well. And that is your News by the Numbers.
Well, thanks so much, Blair. I'll be excited to see if we can sustain that 11,000 mark or if we're going to backslide. It'll be interesting, you know, to see what goes on now that we just heard what Herb was talking about. I'd like to see what the international markets are going to be doing later on.
My best.
All right, well, you have a great rest of the weekend. And again, pop into the chat room and say hi to Blair. Now, since our fabulous guest host was slightly tardy, we are in a different vibe for this second hour, but I don't want us to miss out on anything, so... Yes, it's that time again for the Millionaire Minute. This is the segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life
right now, today. Now, we have 21 characteristics of a millionaire mindset. And I found this for an article that, now I can't even make the attribution because, it's article-based. This is a free article, but they, nobody wants to claim ownership of what these 21 characteristics are, but as I review them, based on what we have been going through with our Millionaire Minute segment, I felt that they were fairly on task, so I thought I'd bring these to you today. This is all about your thoughts, attitudes, and perceptions, and the way we think attracts everything in our life, including success. The most successful people of all time were interviewed to determine what was it that made them wealthy, and I'm guessing this is probably from that Millionaire Mind book. But here are the 21 characteristics. Number one, have a big reason why, and without a big reason, you're probably roadkill. You've got to have the why. Pick a few personal targets that really motivate you. Number three, have a work hard mentality. Number four, have an action mindset. Number five, don't just take action, take massive, focused action. Number six, activity is what creates result, not just positive thinking. Take action, hence this week's key. Number seven, have a long-term perspective. Number eight, you must really like your product or service. Number nine, your business will become how you treat it. If you love your business, it will love you back. Don't be afraid of failure. Embrace it. Just remember Thomas Edison. Number 11, own reality. Most people will not buy or consume what you offer. So get this through your head right now, because the sooner you understand this, the better. Reality is the most is what most people will never buy or consume, and it doesn't matter how fabulous it is, you've got to differentiate yourself from the rest. Number 12, be teachable. Number 13, keep your pipeline full at all times. Number 14, ask yourself, what would it take to be the best blank today? Then do it. Number 17, the phone is your best friend. Number 16, people don't talk people into what you have. If you're marketing appropriately, you won't have to convince folks. They'll be clamoring to be a part of what you're doing. Number 17, start where you are right now. Number 18, be honest and avoid all opportunities based solely on greed. Number 19, have a prospecting mindset. Number 20, look to infinite intelligence for help. Number 21, as you have success, be grateful and publicly express that gratitude. It is vitally important to always have an attitude of gratitude. Even before you're successful, this holds true, and it isn't until you're in a grateful state of mind that you can grow and become successful. You always should be focused on what you have and not what you don't, and if you're grateful for what you have, more will come because the universe knows you appreciate it. A special technique to remember is to always remind yourself what it is that you have to be grateful for and communicate that to others. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. And imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality, and that's your Millionaire Minute. So who's ready for a key today? Anyone? Takers? Anyone? How about a key? Well, I have some keys to riches for you coming up right after this.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And no, finances are not Mission Impossible, not when you have this broadcast. And the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation in your court, giving you tools, tips, tricks, news, and information to help you become financially independent. And the Keys to Riches Financial Freedom Series is here for you to accomplish that. Simply put, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And today we are in our second key from the Keys to Riches series. Last week, we started over with the fabulous Sharon Lecter. And as such, it's National Financial Literacy Month, so let's get a hold of our finances. What can we learn today to make us financially better off? Well, with last week's key of acceptance and affirmation, we talked about the importance of completely addressing with and coming to terms with our current financial state, whatever it may be. Whether we have never managed money, we're young and we don't know, or maybe we've managed money and we've had some success, but we're concerned that there's some gaps in the plan, or maybe we've ventured out financially and whether it was by our own hand or a catastrophic event that beset us, we've made mistakes. Whether ours or somebody else's influence, we've made mistakes and we've got to get moving. And we decided for ourselves that enough is enough and that it's easier to change and learn how to be financially independent than it is to stay financially a mess. Certainly, it's definitely more healthy when you have control over your finances because that's one of the highest leading causes of stress and dis-ease in your life and relationships. So all that was fabulous last week, but then you're like, okay, yeah, so now what do I do? Well, we're going to take action and we're going to make assessment. And if you were reading the e-zine this week, I said we're going green. It's all about organic. And you're probably going, huh? What does washing my vegetables that are pesticide and fertilizer free have to do with my money? Well, it doesn't have much to do with your money other than we are going to make an assessment of where you are financially, but not just what we would call a snapshot assessment. We're not just doing a balance sheet and a cash flow statement. If you have listened to previous broadcasts, Paul Richards from the Institute of Consumer Financial Education calls it the big picture and the close-up. I call it what's the difference? Because it sounds like you could give or take it, but when you see what the difference is, then you're like, uh-oh, I need a bigger difference in my life or a positive difference. But this is more than just doing a balance sheet and seeing what you have, what you owe, and what is the difference. And doing just a simple cash flow statement, or if you were a business, a profit and loss statement, what came in, what went out, and is there positive or negative cash flow? because you probably have a really good idea of what that is. I mean, most people can pretend to be oblivious, but we're not. But we just don't know exactly what's going on. But there's a point to doing it in this process that I have discovered over my years of financial counseling, financial coaching, and teaching workshops to folks who were interested in creating homeownership as the cornerstone of their financial empire. And what I have learned over the last 15 years of teaching all of these seminars, and by the way, I'm a certified homeownership educator and counselor from the AHECTI nonprofit, and that's the American Housing and Education, how does that acronym go? My award is behind the door, so I can't even cheat and read it. But nevertheless, it's a national designation that I earned many years ago to help people get on track. And most of the hang-up with folks when they go to budget, and you'll see that key later on, our seventh key is to break the budget. And people get started on these budgets, and then they move forward, and then they can't get ahead, or they actually get further behind, and they're just like, wow, this budgeting's for the birds. And it's because people don't actually make an assessment of what's going on. You might start with the big picture and the close-up, the what's the difference, and what I call easy come, easy go. But more important, what makes budgets fail is because we just assign arbitrary numbers. Now, I take a lesson from my father on this, and, you know, he wasn't around much. I've never made that a big secret. But the few times that I saw him growing up and the opportunities that I had were so few that I sat at his feet and listened and hung on every word. And it was amazing because his business life was very different from his personal life. And he would always say, you know, I could manage million-dollar budgets for companies and right the ship when they went in the wrong direction, but he couldn't balance his own checkbook. And I talk more about that in Take Emotion Out of the Picture. But one of the things that he was pretty famous for in his company was that they would move him to ailing facilities and have him come in and turn them around. And he didn't just come in and slash budgets and say, you're spending too much on this and you need to spend more on that and save something here. He had to do an assessment. You have to take a look at not just what's coming in and what's going out, but the why. The why on the worksheet for the 21 traits of the millionaire mindset. What's the why? Why is this category so high, and why is this category so deficient? And until we know what's in that category, we really can't get there. So what we got to focus on is this assessment. And I referred to it in the e-zine as organic because we don't want exterior influence, because we're trying to not only see what is going in and what is going out, but there's two other things that we're looking for in this assessment, the when and the why. And usually the when can explain the why, even if we don't want to fess up and be honest to what the why is, especially on outgoing expenditures that may be categorized as frivolous by our significant others. Because, of course, they're never frivolous to us, and we can always justify every bad behavior. And if you don't, just talk to your 13-year-old, and they'll show you how, because that's the age that you really learn how to get good at that, I'm finding out. Anyway, we want this to be organic because what we're talking about are habits. This just isn't about paying bills and making money. This is about habits that we have created and ingrained into our system. And when we think about our financial habits, we've created those based on a value system that we did not come up with. For those of you joining us for the first time, I'm a big, big, big fan of neuro-linguistic programming. And simply, that's how we create and adopt our patterns and model excellence, or the lack thereof. And when it comes to our habits, we do things that are in line with our value system. And some of you are sitting there, I can already envision that puzzled look on your face, that furrowed brow saying, what is she saying? I don't want to be poor. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Like, I definitely didn't want to be poor. I know that I was meant to be rich. What is this? How can she say that that's in line with my value system? Well, let me tell you why I can say that. From age 0 to about 8, 10 years old, our parents influence our values and our patterns. Because that's who we spend the most time with. We walk around, we mimic them. That's the first thing that we do, is we start imitating other people. That's how we get our habits. That's how we get our techniques. And we do that, and we just do that. As kids, we're sponges. We just suck up everything because we're a blank slate. So we're starting to build a foundation of our value system by mimicking others. Right, wrong, or indifferent, doesn't matter. We still mimic our parents. And this is why, even if you never actively teach your child a single thing, you have taught them so much by your good and bad habits. Just a little aside there. So, and then from that age, from the 8 to 10 age, till about, 18, 20, depending on how you are developmentally, your peers then further cement your value system, okay? So as your peers are cementing this value system that your parents started, and everything you do after that, it's in place. And unless you actively work to change your value system or acknowledge you even have one, that's part of the problem. Right, wrong, or indifferent, this is how you're going to go through life, the rest of your life. And if you're fortunate, your parents and your peers positively impacted you and gave you a system and a process that emulates success. But if you're sitting there on the verge of bankruptcy, that probably didn't happen. And you're perplexed. You're befuddled. You have no idea why. Well, it's because of this value system that someone else set in place. So how do we not just fix our money? Because anybody can look at a budget and say, oh, well, we just got to rearrange this money. That's easier said than done. We're talking about overcoming financial habits. And if you're listening to this program and you're not a teenager or a young adult, if you're in your 30s or 40s, you've had plenty of time to reinforce these bad habits. And the challenge is, if you don't know, you don't know. So now you know. So now we're going to give you a process for changing all of that. The difference that you're going to see here with this assessment phase beyond your balance sheet and your cash flow statement is we're going to uncover some of these financial habits. And if we can alter the habits that created the current financial state, we can alter the outcome. Just by changing the habits, we'll change the outcome. It's that simple. And notice I said simple but not easy, okay? Because we have value in the things that we do over and over. Even if they're destructive to us, personally, relationship-wise, professionally, financially, doesn't matter. there's a level of value and there's a positive intent and purpose that we get out of that, even if it's destructive behavior. And if you just do a balance sheet and a cash flow statement, you're not going to get that why and the when and the how, and you're not going to be able to make lasting change in your money managing capabilities. And that's what this is, such an important focus of what we do with the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, because it's not just about money. It's not just about getting rich. It's about creating freedom for us. And that happens a couple of different ways. The freedom to come and go as we please is because of the wealth that we've been able to build. But in order to do that, we have to free ourselves. We've been enslaved to a value system that we had nothing to do with setting up. It's startling, a realization. But you had nothing to do with the foundation of which you operate today. You may think you do, and you may say, oh, but these are my value systems. And you can say all of these things, but on the inside, if there's a conflict going on, it doesn't matter what you say externally. If you have a conflict with your value system is going to win. It's just like the brain and being the greatest superhuman computer ever in the universe. It always succeeds. Your brain and your internal value system are not going to allow a conflict. And so you're going to do what it is that you do based on your value system, unless you actively work to change that value system. And you can't change that value system until you know what's going on. So we're going to do an assessment. And this assessment is what's going to take us to the next level, to be able to accurately identify what it is that we're doing and how we can create a stable, lasting, impactful financial savings and spending plan. We're not going to budget. Budgeting is for people who don't want to get out of debt. Budgeting is for people that want to micromanage money and not address the true challenges that underlie the money. So what we're going to do here is we're going to do an organic assessment. And this is what you're going to do, okay? This is your key action item without actually going through the nuts and bolts. I'm giving you your key action item first. We are going to take our assessment envelope. So you need to get a big manila, maybe two or three, depending on how active you are financially, how many folks are involved in your familial finances. So if you have, you know, a child dynamic, if you have a parental dynamic you're responsible for, spouses, siblings, all that good stuff, you might have a lot of stuff to stick in these assessment envelopes. So in these assessment envelopes, what you are going to do is put everything financially in them that occurs over the next 2 months, okay? And this is why it's so organic, because you are not going to do anything with that information outside of stuff it in this envelope. So paycheck stubs, any interest statements, if you have any kind of assets that earn an income regularly, all that's going to go into this assessment envelope. If you have rental income, you're going to throw that in this assessment envelope. And then everything you spend money on is going to go in here too. Even if it doesn't have a receipt, you're going to take a piece of paper and on a little note, you're going to say, gave child $5 cash for allowance. And that's going to go in there. Went to the vending machine 10 times at 75 cents a visit today. Whatever it is that you spend money on, it's got to go in there. You know, an old Chinese proverb says that if you watch your pennies, your dollars will take care of themselves. But right now, we're not watching. Okay, so we are only collecting these receipts. And the reason why we have to do it for such a long period of time is this. We behave differently at the beginning of the pay period versus the end of the pay period. And then we also behave differently at the beginning of the month versus the end of the month. And so just in case we have an anomaly month or an anomaly pay period, like the transmission went out, and so it wiped out your whole paycheck,
we want to be able to get an accurate, organic picture of what's going on. So you're not going to make any decisions about this, although you will become more cognizant about your spending. But you don't want to make any decisions. That's for break the budget. That's in week 7. So we got 6 weeks to go before we do this. But we want to go through a few pay periods and before the beginning of the month and after the end of the month. So 6 weeks is where we are that we want to start doing this. And it's important because, you know, think about it. You get paid. You're a single guy. You're probably rolling out to the clubs with your friends and you're buying rounds. But think about what happens by the end of the pay period. You're like, dude, can you catch me on this one? I'm good for it. I'll pay you back next paycheck. So we want to be able to catch the peaks and valleys. That's why you want receipts. Date the receipts if you're handwriting them. Ask for a receipt. If you run in for a pack of cigarettes at Circle K and they say, do you want your receipt? The answer is what? Yes, I do. Yes, you want every receipt, and then you're going to make up receipts for everything else. If you give your spouse money, hon, give me 10 bucks. You write it down, you date it, and you stick it in the envelope. Again, you make no judgments or decisions. You just keep going. That's what makes this so organic, because what we're trying to do is get an accurate snapshot of your habits. And we're going to learn so much more about habits this season. I'm so excited. So that's what we want to do, is see what we're doing habitually, because what we're doing habitually is what got us where we are. And if we can change the habits, we can change the outcome. And that's what's going to be key about the take action, make assessment. So if you were wondering what you were doing from last week, okay, well, now I'm accepted. I did my affirmations. I'm worthy. These goals are worthy of my time. I'm ready to go. What do? Well, this is what we're starting to do. This week we're going to start our assessment envelope. I'm going to start collecting receipts. So that's your homework assignment, your key action item for this week. For the rest of the nuts and bolts for this week's key of take action, make assessment, our key statement is, my balance sheet and cash flow statement are not driven by money, but are driven by my habits. And I must organically analyze my habits in order to make the right changes to materially affect my financial outcome. Got that? That's your key statement. So, for those of you who started your affirmations, add this one to your list. I am great at assessing my current financial state. I am great at assessing my current financial state. And for those of you joining us for the first time, we do our affirmations several times throughout the day. The first time we do our affirmations is right before bed. Before we go off into dreamland, we want to focus our mind on our higher purpose. And so we were going to say our affirmations out loud to ourselves right before bed, because that'll get our subconscious mind working all night on what it is that we truly want out of life and truly desire to have for ourselves. So then after a restful, restorative night's sleep, as our brain has created new neural pathways to bring these affirmations into existence, we want to pull out our affirmation list again first thing in the morning to focus our conscious mind on our higher purpose. Our purpose for the day isn't to let the dog out, make the kids breakfast, drop the husband off at work, pick up the dry cleaning, and figure out how we're going to get to work and then get the kids off to all of their activities. Then what we are going to do is anytime we encounter negativity throughout the day, we are going to take our affirmation sheet out and say them again, because what we think about, we bring about. And we don't want to let somebody else's negative issue affect our higher purpose.
And so we're going to read our affirmations again, and you'll find sometimes, several times throughout the day, you might be reading those affirmations. I've had days that it felt like that's all I did because one thing after another kept going sideways. But I stayed focused on my higher purpose by reading my affirmations, and it'll keep you on track. And I'm telling you, the first time you don't do it, you'll notice a difference because I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and sometimes I forget too. And then I'm like, whoa, you get derailed. So that is your nuts and bolts for this week. Again, grab a big manila envelope, start stuffing. Next week we have dreams with deadlines. It'll be the fun planning phase for ourselves. Thank you so much for joining us this Saturday at Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Remember to tune in on Tuesdays at 6:30 in the morning to start your day the millionaire way with Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. It should prove to be a good one. And go Tony Stewart. I hope he wins. He's come close several times here. Let's see if he can't pull it off this weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am Heather Wagenhall's. It's been a pleasure to serve you on your path to financial independence. Thank you so much for joining us. And here is to your financial independence. Be sure to look for more resources at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.